And while, you know, while in exile, they, aside from facing the problem of poverty, how are they going to make money, they wrote, you know, she wrote her autobiography at that time, got a big advance from Alfred Knopf, $7,500, the biggest advance that Knopf had ever given for a manuscript, sight unseen. Berkman wrote, you know, the ABC of communist anarchism, which are very succinct, very clear written account of what anarchist philosophy is. They corresponded with one another about violence, about anarchism, about Emma Goldman took a very firm stand against the idea of violence, against revolutionary violence. She thought it was self-defeating, it was the wrong thing, that the more violent a radical movement got, it meant that the less organizing it had done. The more organizing you did, the less violent you had to be. And they argued about women and men and sexual relations, and Emma insisted that it was different for men and women, and men were cruel and crude in their sexual relations. I don't know how she could possibly say a thing like that, but that's what she said. She tried to educate Alexander Berkman about these things, and educate a lot of other people, because she carried on correspondence with all sorts of people. And they met in Europe, George Bernard Shaw and Bertrand Russell and Rebecca West and Paul Robeson and his wife, Islanda Robeson, all sorts of people, Isadora Duncan, all these people floated in and out of their lives. While they were in exile, they still sort of maintained contact with things going on in America and took up and engaged in campaigns. When Sacco and Vanzetti were in prison and facing death, they did whatever they could to raise money for the Sacco and Vanzetti campaign, for Tom Mooney and Billings, the two labor leaders who also were long prison sentences in the United States. They tried to raise money for them. They always engaged in one battle or another, and never stopped. And in 1936, Berkman, sick, killed himself. He always said, as you might say, part of the anarchist philosophy, I'm going to do it myself when I feel like, you know, I'm going to do it when I decide it's time. Emma Goldman lived for four more years until 1940. In the meantime, she was able to come back to the United States briefly when Frances Perkins was Secretary of Labor, first woman cabinet member. Frances Perkins arranged for Emma Goldman to come back for a three-month lecture tour in the United States, in which she lectured on the drama, so long as she would lecture not on politics, but on the drama, which was one of her favorite subjects. And so she lectured on Ibsen and Shaw and Chekhov and so on. But of course, she got in her political licks while lecturing about these people. And in 1940, while in Toronto, I've skipped a lot of her love affairs, you know, including one with, you know, Leon Malmed, whose papers, correspondence with her here in the Schlesinger Library. But in 1940, while in Canada, she got a stroke and she died, and her remains are in the Waldheim. Finally, she was allowed to come back into the United States for good, now that she was dead, and she buried her ashes in Waldheim Cemetery, where there are the ashes of a number of anarchist leaders. And that's a rough sketch of her life. I haven't even begun to get into so many of her ideas and thinking, but I'll just say this, that what she represents, and I'll leave it to you if you have any questions or comments to give me a chance to say more, but but it's what she represents more than anything else is kind of aside from, you know, that, you know, very powerful idea of direct action, you know, of bypassing all the rigmarole, which not only traditional political organizations engage in, but even some radical political organizations engage in, the traditional rigmarole of politics and voting and elections and representative government and so on. No, direct action. And for people organizing, people gathering themselves and acting, you know, as just as her argument about feminism and voting, you know, voting won't do it. The ballot won't do it. The Constitution, the laws, that doesn't matter. Women must win their freedom directly in the small spheres in which they live, in the actual relations in which they have with the people around them, with the man in the house, with the boss on the job, with the, you know, have to do it yourself directly now. Not going to do it by legislation. But beyond all of that, beyond her ideas, there's just the most important thing, seems to me, is that ferocious spirit of honest independence, of speaking her mind under any circumstances, not being daunted by who was around or what would happen to her, just speaking what she thought was right, and having the faith that if she spoke enough and spoke to enough people and that something would happen, that people would be affected in ways that she couldn't even predict and that no one could predict. And in fact, that did happen with her, as it has happened with so many others. And in ways which we can't trace, she's had an effect on untold numbers of people, and her ideas have entered in some way into the consciousness of people who'd never heard of her. So it's her legacy is a very powerful one, I think, for us right today. Thank you.